from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. The San Francisco nonprofit Tipping Point Community recently announced it would raise $100 million to help the city tackle chronic homelessness. Here's CEO and founder Daniel Lurie.
This is the time to tackle these issues. This is the number one issue of our time in San Francisco, and we simply see too many people suffering on our streets.
But skeptics say San Francisco is already spending record amounts on homelessness, and the crisis seems to be just getting worse. Coming up on Forum, as part of KQED's special week of homelessness coverage, I'll talk with Tipping Point's Daniel Lurie, as well as San Francisco's top homelessness official, Jeff Kaczynski. It's all coming up after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. More than 2,100 people in San Francisco are chronically homeless, meaning that they've been out on the street for at least a year and have a mental health, substance abuse, or other condition that prevents them from working or finding housing. According to San Francisco's 2017 homeless count, the number of chronically homeless has risen about 30% since 2015, and their mortality rate is 4 to 9 times higher than the general population's. But city officials are betting that a new $100 million pledge from the local anti-poverty group Tipping Point Community will make a difference. The group's initiative, which officially launches on July 1st, aims to cut the number of chronically homeless in half over 5 years by building new permanent housing and expanding mental health services. As part of KQED's week-long coverage of homelessness in the Bay Area, we look at the new ways of San Francisco planning to address the complex needs of the homeless in San Francisco, and to help, what ways to help get them off the streets. Let me tell you who's joining us for the hour. Jeff Kaczynski is here in studio, directs the San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, also called the ZAR, which it necessarily favors, but that is the title. Jeff, good to have you back with us.
Thank you very much.
Daniel Lurie is also back with us on Forum, CEO and founder of Tipping Point Community. Welcome, Daniel Lurie.
Thanks, Michael.
Let me begin with you, Daniel. Let's talk about this $100 million pledge, which P.J. Johnston just sent me an email yesterday saying not all the funds are going to the city, and he wanted people to know that you're going to choose based on effectiveness of services and your responsiveness to your mission and so forth. But this is a big order to cut it in half, and it's a big order to raise $100 million.
Well, let me start at the beginning, which is that we're 12 years old, and we've been tackling poverty here in the Bay Area since 2005. And to date, we've funded direct service organizations in the areas of education, housing, employment, and healthcare. And we were only funding direct service organizations. We felt like there was a need, and we wanted to help address that need. About 18 months ago, maybe two years ago, people kept coming to us and saying, what is Tipping Point doing about the homeless crisis? And we'd respond by saying we're funding the great organizations like Martha Ryan's Homeless Prenatal Program or Erica Kish's Compass or Larkin Street. And then we realized that there weren't enough answers. And so we decided that we were going to take a shot at this. And so we built a team, a policy team at Tipping Point. We have now 5 people on the team. And we came up with a strategy to work with the city, partner with the city in some cases, and try to tackle this problem. And so about a year ago, we put this team together, and we committed ourselves to going big on this issue. And $100 million is a large amount of money, but in the context of what is spent on this issue, it's not there. But it allows us to work in partnership with Jeff and his team and Mayor Lee and his team and bring to bear the knowledge that Tipping Point has built over the 12 years that we've been in business, knowing what works, knowing what doesn't work, and we're trying to bring our expertise to this very complex problem.
Where are you now in terms of the $100 million? You've raised more than half of that?
So we have $60 million committed, which is an incredible sum of money. We have a focus on 3 areas. We want to build more units and mine existing units. So an example in that area is that we have a moving on grant that we have made. Over the next 3 years, we would like to move 600 people out of supportive housing units who are able and willing to move into market rate housing using Section 8 vouchers that have been underutilized over the last few years. Thanks to Jeff's team and thanks to our grant with a group called Brilliant Corners, we have already started moving people out of supportive housing into market rate, which frees up the ability to move the chronically homeless into that really important supportive housing, which has wraparound services in it. The second thing that we really need to do is stop the accelerants, stop people who are flooding the streets in the sense that we can't build our way out of this problem. We have to attack the root causes, which are the criminal justice system, the child welfare system, the mental health system. And so we're working on that area. And our third prong of our effort is to really optimize the public sector and to work with the city that is spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year and help them become even better, more efficient, more effective at what they're doing. And we've actually started paying for a couple of staff people to work inside City Hall or inside city departments to help them do their work more efficiently.
And then, again, Daniel Lurie is head of Tipping Point Community and CEO. And Jeff Kaczynski directs San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. Let's break down a little numbers, if we can, with you, Jeff. We've got, at this point, the city's spending more. It's spending roughly, Kevin Fagan's done a lot of this crunching of numbers and gets a good deal of credit for it, about $80,000 per citizen. It's a lot of money. And costs have gone up 30% since 2015. The fact of the matter is, I'm just wondering at this point, when you look at those numbers and you look at the fact, and again, I'm hats off to Kevin Fagan on this, in San Francisco, each year the amount spent on ambulance rides and hospital stays and jail and other services is about four times the cost of housing. We have a net that's spreading, or that seems to be growing, don't we, in terms of cost?
I think the city has made some really wise investments over the past 10 or 15 years. Since 2005, we've helped over 25,000 people exit homelessness. This is challenging to be able to do this, given a lot of the struggles the people on the streets are facing, as well as the cost of housing here in San Francisco. I don't think that we're overinvesting. However, I do think that the city is learning how to use what we have more effectively by setting up a single data system, by building in greater accountability and using data to make decisions rather than kind of bouncing from idea to idea, if you will. And I look forward to not only seeing the pie get bigger through partnerships with philanthropic organizations like Tipping Point and others, but also using what we have more effectively.
I should mention, by the way, Kevin Fagan, who I've mentioned twice, is with the San Francisco Chronicle and has done a whole – we've been doing a lot of work with the Chronicle and others partnering on homelessness whole week. This has been our focus. But does the city have a clear picture of who's out on the streets, Jeff? I mean, Minneapolis tracks people and their specific needs at San Francisco. I know we did vets and families recently, but why not everybody else?
Yes, so we are working on this right now. It was one of the reasons that Mayor Lee created this new department, is to really get a better handle on the problem systemically, but also to know each homeless person that's out on the streets or in our shelters or people who are in our permanent supportive housing. When I started the job, there's 15 different databases tracking homeless individuals and homeless services. We are now consolidating that into one system, which is called the One System, Online Navigation and Entry System.
Like the CompStat and the Wire, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And we plan to use that. It's gone live as of last month, and we're now populating it with data. And by next year, we should be able to have weekly meetings with our staff in the department and be able to have goals around how many people we need to house to achieve a reduction in chronic homelessness or in family homelessness, and to say, hey, we hit our goal this week, that's great, or we didn't quite make it this week, what are we going to do next week to move us towards achieving this goal?
Well, that's really good, because there were 15 different databases. There was no data sharing, so this is maybe long overdue. What about the fact that complaints have gone up? I saw that the complaints about tent encampments, about human feces, about needles out there are five times up what they were just a year ago.
I'm not sure that that's the – I mean, we have seen different data, which is actually – you know, the complaints have absolutely gone up, but we've started to see a decrease during the past few months. But nonetheless, there are quite a few complaints, and the problem has become quite visible, and people are very frustrated. The numbers of homeless people have not gone up significantly. In fact, they've gone down slightly. However, places where homeless people are camping or appearing is starting to change. We're seeing a shift in the locations of where folks were. You know, a long time ago, there were quite a few homeless people down in Mission Bay by where the houseboats are. That area has become developed, China Basin, Trans Bay areas, and people are moving into more central parts of the city and even into the western parts of the city, as we're seeing in this this point in time count increases in a lot of districts that traditionally didn't have a lot of homeless folks. So it's really the city is changing and it's creating less places for homeless people to be and making the problem more visible and creating challenges in neighborhoods around quality of life and other concerns that go along with having large encampments in residential areas.
Well, Daniel Lurie, you were talking before about the use of housing vouchers. How would that work exactly? There's been talk about $1,500, for example, for one bedroom per month, that sort of thing.
The voucher actually now is we got a market rate adjustment the city did with some of our team members help that it's now $1,900. And so you can start finding places for people, studio apartments for people to move from supportive housing into market rate housing at that number. So we just have to better utilize that. This group, Brilliant Corners, is helping us do that. We've already actually have 17 people just in the past month either have moved in or are about to move into their own apartments, which is what we need to do. Going back to your last point about the complaints going up, listen, I'm raising a young family in this city. I understand the quality of life issues. We shouldn't be complaint-based. We shouldn't be reacting to complaints. We should be putting those people that are suffering on our streets at the center of the solution. We should be hearing their voices, and we should help people move into
You're saying you
housing.
Should ignore the complaints?
I'm not saying we should ignore them, but that is not why we are going at this problem. We're going at this problem because we have our neighbors are suffering and they are dying on our streets. And San Francisco prides itself on being compassionate, on being progressive, and there's nothing progressive about what we're seeing on our streets. And so, you know, if there's one message I'd like to get across today is that every single person in this city, every politically elected official in this city needs to help be part of this solution, not so that, you know, someone doesn't see a homeless person, but so that we can help our neighbors get off the streets.
Well, you mentioned criminal justice system and people bringing things like foster care. I mean, how do those fit into your picture or your vision of helping these neighbors, as you call them? And some might say these aren't our neighbors, they're people who are parked out in tents on our street or something.
This is where we've developed an expertise over the 12 years through the 44 nonprofits that we partner with day in and day out. We know that a child that has gone through the foster care system, when he or she exits the foster care system, has a 50% chance of ending up in jail or homeless. Those numbers are simply unacceptable. If we also know that people are touching the criminal justice system at incredibly young ages, and once you do that, your ability to succeed in life and to not end up on the streets plummets. So we need to work with those groups that I mentioned before. We need to work with those foster care agencies that are cutting edge, that are helping to move those kids into permanent housing at young ages, help them succeed, help them get into college, help them get the jobs. We need better job training programs. And then the other issue that I also raised is the mental health issue. We obviously, what we are seeing on our streets, there are a lot of mental health problems. So the majority of people who are chronically homeless have a mental health or a drug dependency or an alcohol dependency, and oftentimes they have.
For the chronic homeless, it's about half, isn't it?
I think it's more than half. So what we need to do is have those folks have case managers. We need to open more respite center beds. One of our investments alongside Barbara Garcia at the Department of Public Health was, you know, creating 34 new respite beds so that people aren't cycling from shelter to the SF General and then back out onto the street. Let's get someone from shelter into a respite center where they can get great case management done by the Department of Health.
The navigation centers were really pretty much with that in mind initially.
Well, I think, listen, I think the navigation centers is you know, what Mayor Lee and Jeff Kaczynski have come up with, and I think they're extraordinarily positive development, and those have been great. But we need to have exits. We have to have places for people to exit too, so hence we need to build more housing. So we need more navigation centers, but what we really, really, truly, desperately need is more housing.
You need new ways to build new housing. You need modular new sites. You need all the rest of those things.
All of the above.
But let me go back to you, Jeff, if I could, especially in San Mateo, for example, there is Medicaid waivers that can actually turn healthcare money into housing money. Why not do that in San Francisco?
So we are working on that, and actually we've been working with Tipping Point as thought partners on this issue, and we just received a very large Medi-Cal waiver called the Whole Person Care through the Whole Person Care program, in which we're bringing in, I believe, approximately $15 million into the city to focus on the nexus between homelessness and healthcare, and to work with people who are on our streets, who are chronically homeless, those who are ill, who are suffering from physical or mental health disabilities and challenges, to both coordinate the housing on our department side, and then work with the Department of Public Health to coordinate their care, to be able to do that in an unprecedented level of cooperation in this area that goes not only with working with each individual that we're trying to assist, but also in sharing data across systems in a way that's never been done before.
Can you get more money from the feds, too? A lot of people think since Gavin Newsom, with his first solution, gave up federal money, that maybe there's more federal money to be had, even in this age of Trump, from the feds?
Oh, I'm not sure about anybody giving up federal money. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't look like there's going to be increases. In fact, there's going to be decreases in the proposed budget for housing and urban development, which is of grave concern. As Daniel mentioned, you know, we're working really closely and well with the Housing Authority to try to move what had been unused Housing Authority vouchers and get them on the streets and get people into housing. And that's been very exciting. And we were, you know, hoping under a different administration we would see increased investments in HUD and more Housing Authority vouchers. I think that's going to we're going to see the opposite, which is of grave concern. However, I'm hopeful because the issue of homelessness has been a bipartisan issue really for the past 10 to 15 years. And we've seen investments both from Republican and Democratic administrations around homelessness. So our hope is that the Trump administration will continue along that path. But we're not particularly hopeful that there's going to be a lot of new money forthcoming. But Mayor Lee and many of the mayors on the West Coast have been working together to talk to D.C., to lobby D.C., and to let them know how much we are struggling, with many cities on the West Coast seeing double-digit increases in homelessness during the past 2 years, and to try to figure out what support we can get from Washington.
Again, Jeff Kaczynski with us in studio, directs the San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. And Daniel Lurie is CEO and founder of Tipping Point Community. And Daniel, Jeff Bamberger of UCSF says Tipping Point money should be used like a catalyst. So you got $100 million, nearly half of San Francisco's yearly budget of $240 million. How can it be a catalyst? Is private money more flexible money?
In this case, absolutely. You know, we talked about the Brilliant Corners and getting that going really quickly, trying to move people from supportive housing into permanent housing. That was something that we instigated. You know, putting a project like the 34 respite beds that we helped the Department of Public Health, we helped put that project over the finish line. We have other ideas that, yes, absolutely. That is the beauty of our commitment. Our commitment is going towards the issue of chronic homelessness. It's not necessarily going to the city and county of San Francisco.
I said, P.J. Johnson made clear on his email to me.
P.J.'s good on the talking points. Absolutely, I concur. That's what we've always been about. How do we catalyze efforts and then help? In this case, you know, what Jeff was just talking, there may not be more federal funding coming with this administration, but I think there are ways to tap into funds that we haven't necessarily tapped into prior. And no matter what, for a private foundation, no matter how big our dollars are, we can never match the size and scale of the city and county of San Francisco or the state of California and even the feds during a time like this.
However, and let me go to you on this, Jeff, there are structural barriers aside from cost. I mean, we've got union concerns, we've got lack of land, we've got NIMBY complaints, and the list goes on. So you're dealing with, as extraordinary as your work has been, pretty much lots of bits and pieces here. It's a whole gestalt.
Yeah, it is, you know, an uphill battle. However, I'm very excited that during the past year, under Mayor Lee's leadership, we've added close to 800 new beds of permanent supportive housing for chronically homeless adults into our pipeline that can serve very high needs individuals who are currently on our streets and provide them with great wraparound services and a wonderful place to live. But that can't be the only solution. We need to look at how can we leverage the private market? How can we look at alternative ways of building housing? How can we help reconnect people back to their families? And, you know, one way that's I think one thing that's just unprecedented about the investment from Tipping Point, not only in its size, but also in its partnership with the city and sharing resources and being a thought partner. Now, Daniel's board, Tipping Point's board, is going to make the decisions on how the funding gets spent. However, you know, we sit down and talk to the staff on a very regular basis. And this moving on idea, for example, you know, we came up with together. Tipping Point was able to fund it much more quickly than we would be able to do as a government agency. But now it's part of my budget. It's become an institutionalized part of the city's response. We piloted it in partnership with Tipping Point, and now it's a new way of doing business that, you know, in a very short time that this initiative has been in place, we've already piloted a great new idea that's getting a lot of positive attention from homeless people themselves and from the providers community. And I'm sure, you know, this is just the start of innovative ways of moving the dial on the problem.
Well, I'm coming up on a break, so I have to move quickly here. But is there a danger, because listeners always bring this up, that as for San Francisco becomes more and more able to deal with homeless problems or ameliorate homeless problems, it becomes more of a mecca?
Well, the data consistently shows that that's not the case. It's been, there's consistently been about 25 to 30% of the people who are homeless in San Francisco came from somewhere else. The overwhelming majority were housed in San Francisco before they became homeless. But I will also say that, you know, coordinated entry will help us better understand the inflow of people becoming homeless in the city, better understand where they're coming from, and better able to manage the problem and that concern that people might have.
All right, I am coming up on a break, and I want to bring listeners into this. Daniel, I know you had something to say. When we come back, we'll go to you on this. But let me also give listeners an opportunity to join this conversation. We do invite you to do that now, and you may have some thoughts, you may have some reflections, you may have some ideas. We definitely want to hear what they are, and we certainly want you to be part of the program. So you can join our conversation now by calling in at our toll-free number. It's 866-733-6786. Again, let me repeat that number, 866-733-6786. Or email us, forum at kqed.org, or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum, or go to our Facebook page. Many ways you can indeed become part of the program, and we do welcome your involvement. So please feel free to join us. Again, we're talking with Jeff Kaczynski, Director of San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, and Daniel Lurie, who is CEO and founder of Tipping Point Community. You're listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are talking this hour about homelessness, as we've been talking about it all week during our 10 o'clock hours, focusing on problems and what can be done about them. And Daniel Lurie with us, CEO and founder of Tipping Point Community, and Jeff Kaczynski also with us in studio, directs the San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. I said Daniel had a remark to make, and I guess it was about what you took to be my optimism, though I was really crediting that with more what we hear from listeners.
I think
we could add that footnote
the,
if you'd
the,
like.
No, yeah. I just think that what we are trying to do with this initiative at Tipping Point is to provide hope and to try to provide people with this sense that there are people that care, that this is not just a government problem. This is a problem for all of us who live and love San Francisco. And so we all have to be part of the solution. And anyone that says, you know, we will become a mecca, I hope we are a mecca for all sorts of people. I mean, we have people that have moved to San Francisco from the gold rush onto this new tech boom, and we will continue to be that. And what comes with that territory is being a city that is compassionate and takes care of its own. And as Jeff said, most of the people that we are seeing on our streets are San Francisco residents or former residents that had homes here.
And I hear from listeners, though, about something that we could broadly call compassion fatigue. And let me give you an example of this, because you were talking before about neighbors and taking care of them and so forth. This is Amy who writes, I have to walk through one tent camps twice a day between my parking lot and my office, and it's insane. The smell is so bad that I have actually thrown up from it. I've called both 311 and the non-emergency police line at least a dozen times, and they do nothing. Is this really our new San Francisco? No wonder the city has such a hard time keeping families.
I agree with everything that writer just sent in. We have failed as a community. We have failed as a city. In that we have people that are living in these unsafe conditions, unsanitary conditions, and it is a huge quality of life issue, no question. But what is the alternative? This compassion fatigue? We can't get fatigued. We have to actually redouble our efforts. And I think what you're seeing in the city with the multiple new efforts from the city side and also from the business and philanthropic side is that we care about this issue and that we can do better.
Let me go to another listener question here before I go to our phone calls for you, Jeff. So listener wants to know, are there concerns about having a non-government group have so much influence over homeless policy and implementation? I think Daniel Lurie mentioned his people would be working within City Hall.
No, not at all. I think it is outstanding to have philanthropy stepping up as thought partners. And as Daniel said, this is not a problem for everyone in our city. You know, in fact, most of our work is done by nonprofit organizations.
Forgive me, did you hear the interview I did with Naomi Klein by any chance?
No, unfortunately.
She was talking about philanthropists are playing too preeminent a role in setting policy and becoming part of the navigators of policy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Daniel doesn't set policy for the city, and I don't tell the Tipping Point Board how to spend their money. There's certainly, you know, a difference between us, but partnering, is a beautiful thing, and it's an important way to work together as opposed to, you know, sitting on different sides of the table from one another and letting philanthropy do what they're doing and the city's doing what it's doing, and they don't come together in a cogent strategy. I think this is just a new day, and not just with Tipping Point, other initiatives that we're engaged with, most notably the Heading Home campaign around addressing family homelessness, which is a $30 million public-private partnership led by Mark and Lynn Benioff and Google and others, has the same dynamic. We're all working together, not just bringing money to the table, but bringing good ideas and the talents of different organizations, and I think that's how we're going to get across the finish line with this problem.
All right, again, I'm going to go to calls, but Jeff, I'd like you to respond to Kurt, a listener who writes, after you help these 2,100 chronic homeless, how do you prevent 2,100 new chronic homeless from replacing them? This is a Band-Aid approach, not a permanent solution.
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And I think one of the things that the new department is doing that's really never been done before in San Francisco, but has been very successful in other communities, is setting up essentially a data model that allows us to look at what the impact is of lowering chronic homelessness, what's going to be the impact of lowering family homelessness, which levers can we pull to see an overall reduction in homelessness, whether it's prevention by keeping people from getting evicted or from becoming homeless out of the foster care system.
Or, and forgive me for interrupting, but yep. you have some real success just in numbers, I know, with families and youth. Slight decrease, but success. But not with single adults
that's
out
right.
there.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And I think leveraging investments that Tipping Point's going to make, as well as having a better understanding of who's on the street and how we can assist them, and knowing each individual on the street, is going to make a very big difference. I think another thing that we're moving towards in the city is to make sure that our permanent supportive housing is going to people who are chronically homeless, who need it the most, but also providing assistance to people who may just need a hand up, maybe assistance with a security deposit or help paying rent for 6 months or so, and some light touch services to help those folks not become the chronically homeless.
You know, there are a lot of people out there who game the system, too. I mean, who are, in other words, willing to take advantage, shall we say, of the largesse of the city here and
there may
do
be
it where they may not be as in need of it as others who are definitely in need.
there may be a few people that may do that, but I've seen over and over again, you know, failed public policies around trying to address poverty in the in this effort to reduce fraud. And I just think it's you know, really ill-conceived and doesn't make sense to not invest in programs that make sense because one or two people may take advantage of them.
All right, let me bring our callers into this. And first caller is Gonzo. Morning, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Yes, sir, you're on the air. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the system is great once you fall into it, you know? It takes a while to understand your way through the system. And the streets are pretty tough.
You've been homeless, Gonzo?
I've been homeless for 2 years. I finally got my place. And I did it by myself. But, you know, you got to know the pathway to go. And no BSing, you know. You just got to follow it through. And
is it tough finding your way around those pathways? I've got to ask you.
Oh, hell yeah. You can take the wrong path, and you'll be in real bad shape. There's an old saying that goes, the street giveth, and the street taketh away.
Yeah, well, I understand, and I thank you for that call. Just speaking along those lines for a moment, I'm wondering if you got a lot of good-intentioned people who want to help the homeless. We've heard from them during this whole week and many years that we've been covering this problem. They want to give tents, they want to give money, and so forth. They make the work harder for you guys sometimes, Daniel Lurie?
Listen, I think if you care about this issue, we want all comers. I think we have to be strategic about how we support and how we support the efforts of a city and a county like San Francisco. I think what we need is more people saying yes and less people saying no. When you're talking about building navigation centers, when you're talking about building more supportive housing, and you have a number of elected officials saying, not in my district, because we don't really have homeless in our district. That, to me, is not what we need. We need everyone working together. And so doing a piecemeal approach usually does not work, and hence our strategic plan and partnership with the city and county of San Francisco.
Well, I've got a listener named Shelley who wants to know how Tipping Point is using professional social workers in developing their homelessness program.
Well, listen, we are working with the nonprofit groups. We're working with the city and county who are the experts on the ground. We are not building up a huge team at Tipping Point. We are building up a team to get smart, to figure out where we can leverage public dollars, where we can maximize the use of these private dollars, and in short run, really try to make what is working more efficient and effective.
And we go to more of your calls. Roger, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. First and foremost, I heard the word Mecca, and Mecca turned me on to this conversation. And there was a time where we had, if it is the Holy Land in California, and we're talking about San Francisco and the Bay Area, I get off the freeways and I see homeless encampments as they multiply, and I see more homeless people on the street. But I guess, you know, so it's obvious that there is an issue that needs to be concerned. I know there was a poll taken probably every year or every 3 years to regulate who is homeless and how they got to that point. But I also think that a lot of the homeless people, regardless of their illness, everybody wants to believe they have a choice. And maybe their choice is freedom. And I'm not saying that the freedom to join Tipping Point, join the city government, whether it's taken in account by their being forced into it, that's up to the individuals. But I also want to say I think your organization, just listening to it, is awesome. I'm taking in mental notes, and I'm foreseeing the program as you're describing, and it's developing. So I just want to take that comment to you that it's awesome, and I'll take that comment off the air.
All right, Roger, thank you. Good to hear from you. What about this idea about people voluntarily, chronic homeless people who voluntarily want to be on the streets?
You know, I have met, I've been doing this work for quite a while in the city, and I haven't really met anybody who grew up wanting to be homeless. You know, this isn't a lifestyle that people would choose, although circumstances sometimes will force them, you know, into situations where they're on the streets. People who have mental health issues before they became homeless, they get made much worse while they're on the streets. People struggling with substance abuse disorders, you know, same thing. And sometimes, you know, we need to work with folks who, due to substance abuse disorder or a mental health disorder, have a hard time connecting with people, have a hard time working with our social workers, have a hard time visualizing coming indoors. But we're very, very successful and compassionate, I would say, and persistent in working with these folks to help them come indoors. But I don't think anybody, you know, really chooses to want to live this sort of lifestyle. Now, there may be a few people, but again, we shouldn't be making our policies based on, you know, one or two people who may say, I choose to be out here.
Well, you know, we had some homeless folks on just yesterday who we were focusing on homeless people who have jobs and who are working, and some of them with children going into the shelters and everything. And they say they're very, they actually seem to be unanimous in the fearfulness of dealing with some of the people that they have to deal with. Not only, we're not only talking about mentally ill people, we're talking about sometimes people who have led a criminal life or, you know, a life as transgressive as one could imagine.
Yeah, and, I mean, listen, I agree with what Jeff just said. And if it's a choice between, you know, being on the street and an unsafe shelter, then I understand the choice of being on the street. That
especially if you got kids.
We have to give people real
choices. Or in their
choices.
Car.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to give people real choices. And I think what the city has done with the navigation centers is realize that we need to do better in the shelter care system, and they are doing that. But we have to do more. We have to give people real options to get care and to get a supportive and permanent place to live.
And we go to more of your calls. Let me bring Noah in next. Noah, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just briefly want to say I really appreciate that last comment from your guest. We absolutely have to give people real choices, and no one makes the choice to be homeless to face all these you know, terrible issues and stresses that people do, or at least very few people. But I think one aspect of this conversation that's frankly missing is that, you know, while we can set up piecemeal reforms to try to deal with the symptom of homelessness, there is no discussion throughout this entire week about the fundamental economic system that produces symptoms like homelessness in the first place, a system that allows the accumulation of wealth at the top, that ships jobs overseas, and that forces people into a life like this when resources are stripped from them. And I don't have a whole lot of time, but I just really hope that next time you deal with this issue, KQED will take a broader perspective and understand that it's not just about how we solve homelessness by serving homeless people directly. It's about how we structure our economic system in such a way that poverty is less and less possible.
Well, point well taken. And certainly the economic system has come up for flogging on different programs that we've done. Jeff Kaczynski, you want to say something?
Yeah, I'd like to do a little flogging. Myself, and I think thank you for bringing that up, Noah. It's an important point. You know, the U.S. spends over $150 billion a year subsidizing home ownership through mortgage interest tax deduction and capital gains exclusion, and spends less than $30 billion a year in providing rent subsidies to low-income individuals. And that has and that number has been reduced by 80% since 1978. If we were to flip that equation, we wouldn't be having this discussion about homelessness. If we were able to provide a universal housing subsidy to all people who needed it, homelessness would no longer be the crisis that it is. And in fact, the growth of, you know, modern day homelessness since 1978 was really precipitated by deep cuts to HUD that started in 78 and continued through the Reagan and Bush administrations.
Here's John, who writes, and let me go to you on this, Daniel Lurie. I understand that we need empathy for the homeless, but I too have an extremely large homeless camp in Soma across from the largest shelter in the city. People have stopped using that side of the street due to the amount of needles, debris, etc. Why doesn't Tipping Point spend money on keeping those sites clean and neighborhood-friendly while you strive to solve the problem on a larger scale?
Point taken in the sense that, you know, I understand where that writer is coming from. We are in the business of fighting poverty, trying to house people. In terms of cleaning the streets, law enforcement, we are definitely going to leave those issues to the city and county of San Francisco. That is definitely out of our range. I think if we can give people real choices, real opportunities for getting well, getting case management, getting housing, then people aren't going to be on the street. And so let's give people choices, and then we can clean up the streets and enforce what are many existing laws.
And here's John from San Francisco. John, join us.
Hello. Yeah, I have a business, bicycle shop, Market Street Cycles, directly across from one of the newer navigation centers that was the Civic Center Hotel previously. And I guess I would come down on the side of compassion degeneration, unfortunately, even though I am very sympathetic to these issues, because all that has happened since that navigation center has opened was that an even larger homeless population has gathered around it. They've filled the alley and back with tents and stolen bicycles, which is obviously a pet peeve of mine. And the odor is down the block. And it just strikes me as so ironic that while the wealth pours into this city, what you can see at every turn of your head, which is a direct correlation to the poverty and kicking people out of their places that they can no longer afford. I can barely afford it in this town. And why don't we directly correlate those things in terms of who has to pay for it? Where is the money coming to handle that very same problem from the companies that are driving these people out of their homes and, for that matter, driving regular tax-paying housed citizens out of the city?
Jeff Kaczynski.
Yeah, first of all, John, thank you for your compassion around the issue, and I understand your frustration. I do want to let you know that we're aware of the problem on that alley and are actually working with the Department of Public Works to come up with a solution and with the people who are currently camped out there to find them a better place to be, a safe place to be indoors, and then making sure that we don't get a re-encampment there. So we are working on that issue. And I,
you
know,
work on them stopping to steal bicycles, maybe too, in some way.
Look, I think that this is another, you know, one of the challenges when we think about homelessness is that sometimes people conflate crime or even mental illness and street behavior, you know, with homelessness. Most
he just said there are a lot of stolen bicycles there. I'm just pretty much responding to his comment.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's certainly you know, issues with criminality on the streets, and there's certainly people who are in encampments that may be engaged in criminal behavior, but that's the minority of people who are out on the streets. Most of the folks out there are really suffering, and we do try to work with the police to make sure that people who are engaged in criminal activities are being held accountable, because frankly, many of them are preying on homeless people who are out on the streets and in encampments, whether it's preying on them by selling them dealing drugs or whether it's stealing their things or engaging in acts of violence. We're certainly concerned about criminality on the streets, both for housed and unhoused people.
Well, when we had the young people on yesterday who were working jobs and are homeless, I was struck by the fact that they spoke about some of the dangers and difficulties of criminal behavior that they encounter on the street and that they encounter in the navigation center and the shelters. But they also spoke about how extraordinarily decent and good and kind and generous many of these people are with what little, if almost nothing, they have. It's a mix. It's humanity, really.
Yep, absolutely.
Let me bring some more callers on here, and let's go to John, another John. John, go ahead.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you for the show. It's great. I'm really surprised that these people, I mean, it wants to be part of the solution, and everybody calls up with its negativity, including you, Michael Krasny. I mean, you saw that the homeless steal bikes. I've had 4 bikes stolen in a mission, and it wasn't the homeless that stole
them. Sir, I was just responding to the caller. That's all.
Yeah, well, anyhow, I was a homeless alcoholic for 4 years, a practicing alcoholic. I've been clean and sober for 35 years now. And I work with the homeless on a regular basis, me and my friends from Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have made 3 attempts at the mayor's office, when Devin Duffy handled this thing, and with the new fellow, all I got was a clerk in the mayor's office. Everybody was happy to have me, you know, be part of the solution. Never got a call back. 3 times, never got a call back. And this guy so really sounds like the real deal. That's why I'm calling, because they need somebody, you know, who won't give us the bureaucratic runaround. I have people that we, you know, our lives are depend on staying sober by helping sober practicing alcoholics, and the homeless is riddled with that. When we go to shelters, we go to parks. I bring soup to Portman Square, to Washington Square, you know, for the homeless. They know me. They talk to me. I know them. I can relate to them. I don't think that these teams that are working with the homeless now are as proficient as we are. And yet nobody will call me back to help. Explain that to me.
Well, I certainly hear your concern. I don't know if we can explain why people aren't calling you back, but I thank you for the call. Anybody want to respond to that call? Daniel Lurie?
Sure. Well, thank you for the work that you're doing, and congratulations on your sobriety. And I would be happy to touch base with you. You can email me at jeff.kositsky, K-O-S-I-T-S-K-Y, at sfgov.org. I would love to hear from you, and I will absolutely get back to you.
And we thank you for the call, and we go to another caller. Shelley in San Jose is next up. Shelley, hi.
Hi. Glad to be talking to you. I work with the homeless and observe the homeless a lot. I'm near Ground Zero, St. James Park in San Jose. There's a program called PATH, and I wonder if Jeff is aware of it, that works with the homeless here. And it's had some really good successes working with the chronically homeless. They target a certain geographic area, both people who live, you know, who live in on the streets and the zip code near City Hall, and also who spend a lot of time hanging out there. When they often reach out to them on the streets. They give them wraparound services. And I've seen them work with a nice, very troubled lady who goes to our church and, you know, used to hang outside our church. And the results, you know, what they've done is really good. They also work with other people, again, very successfully. But again, I'm very impressed at what they have done with the homeless. I don't know if you've heard of this group.
I know, you know the group I reviewed, Jeff or Daniel?
It's called PATH.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
Anyway, it's had some successes here. And, of course, it's not like one size fits all, but...
Well, it's good of you to mention them, and both guests are familiar with them, and I thank you for bringing them up here. A lot of talk about mental hospitals, and let me go to a tweet here. Adam says, is the model of a mental health hospital completely dead? So many people I see really need long-term help, not just pop-in care.
Well, you know, it's come up in our research, and that, you know, it is extraordinarily expensive to build a mental health hospital, but we have to think about doing targeted services, as your last caller just said. We need more beds available for acute mental health patients. We have a handful of them here in San Francisco, but we need more of them. I think that's a more realistic short-term solution. I don't know if you guys have talked about it, Jeff, at a larger level.
Yeah, I know that the Department of Public Health this year is planning to add 40 or so more beds for people who are struggling with mental health issues. And there is also a need for subacute care facilities for people who are both coming out of the mental health system, but also who have completed substance abuse treatment programs, but maybe aren't ready to be on their own. And certainly we don't want them to go back on the streets again. This is a national crisis that we're facing in this space, but I'm really proud to be working closely with the Department of Public Health and hope we'll make some progress on that this year.
Let me read another listener comment. It says, money, money, money. When will we learn that money isn't going to fix homelessness? The homeless need dignity. Money is for the bureaucratic system. And another listener wants to know about Transbay Terminal. Let me go to you on this, Jeff. What are you going to do about the homeless who will move into the Transbay Terminal?
Well, first of all, I want to say on the I agree that dignity and working with each individual where they're at and treating them with respect and compassion is key to the solutions to homelessness. And I think just adding more money to the problem also isn't the only solution. We need to use what we have more effectively. We need to listen to the voices of people with lived experience, with nonprofit providers, philanthropy, neighbors and businesses, and making the decisions about how we can do better moving forward. And as far as Transbay goes, we have been in discussions with the folks who are going to be managing the terminal. We are looking at a number of different options to make sure that people who are homeless that might gravitate to the terminal are able to get access to services and the resources that they need. So that those conversations are happening, and we should have a plan in place before the terminal opens in December.
Let me read a comment and get your response to this, either of you or both of you. Cameron writes, there is an immediate solution. Ban tents from the city streets and utilize large parking lots and other open space in the city and establish city-supervised tent cities with bathrooms and other facilities. Something extraordinary needs to be done now.
I agree that something extraordinary needs to be done. I don't think it's sanctioned encampments. What I would say is money is not going to solve this problem, Michael. I would say that more time, more attention. And what I am so proud of our local community, proud of KQED, proud of the, you know, Audrey Cooper and the San Francisco Chronicle, people like Kevin Fagan, really covering this issue and giving it the attention it deserves, because we can do better in this city. San Francisco's never shied away from a challenge. This is the issue of our time, and we can do something about it if we all work together. And so that is what needs to be extraordinary in this moment.
What do you think about Diane's comment here, Daniel? She says, why try to provide permanent housing in San Francisco, the most expensive city in the country? Wouldn't it be more effective to navigate those who are able to live independently to other locations where housing is relatively cheap and jobs available?
That is that's part of the solution as well. 80% of the placements of people over the last number of years has been outside the city and county of San Francisco. Real choices, real opportunities for people may be in San Francisco and may be outside of San Francisco.
Well, let me wish both of you good luck and commend both of you for the work that you do. And I hope you can continue to ameliorate this problem. It's been a problem that has long been with us. And you've got some solutions here that I hope work. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much.
Jeff Kaczynski, Director of San Francisco's Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, and Daniel Lurie, CEO and founder of Tipping Point Community. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. And you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irina Gucci, Tina Larberg, and Susan Britton. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Engineer today is Howard Gelman. Managing editor, Ethan Lindsay. Executive producer, Holly Kernan. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.